This is St. Pete X, affectionately known as SPX. SPX brings you St. Pete's brightest business people, civic leaders, and citizens who share their insight and expertise, as well as their love of our great city. SPX is presented by the St. Petersburg Group. Head to stpete.co to check out more episodes, and by St. Pete's most effective marketing agency, Big C. Browse to bigc.co to see their work. Now enjoy the conversation.
Hi, this is Ashley Renesca, and I'm here today with Rick Baker. Welcome to the show.
It's good to be here, Ashley. Thank you.
I know that there was a tremendous amount of speculation around you running for mayor, and you were incredibly successful in warding off transparency before you were ready to give it.
You know, I think a lot of people believe that I decided something, but I was just not telling anybody yet. And that really was never the case. I really didn't decide till very much, you know, shortly before I announced that I was running. I have a lot of options. I'm blessed to have a lot of options in my life. I actually am about to publish another book I've been working on for 10 years. And so it's a book on the history of Florida. I kind of like history. So I've been working on that. I've got publisher's proofs coming in right now as I'm running for mayor. Obviously, I hadn't intended to do both of these things at the same time. And, you know, I have a good gig at the Edwards Group. You know, we're doing the Rowdies, and did Sundial and worked on the One St. Pete project and some other things around the town. So that's been good. And I've long been encouraged to run for state office as well. And so, trying to balance all what's the right thing to do. My kids are both in college now, so it makes it a little bit less time demanding on raising kids. My kids were 4 and 5 years old when I started out being mayor before. So it really was a balanced and approach. And at the end of the day, my decision process was, where could I serve? And I believe we should all serve, right? Whatever we're doing, we have a duty to give back and to try to help the community we live in, or the place we live, or the world, or the country, or whatever we choose. I was the business lawyer for Templeton Mutual Funds, which is now Franklin Templeton. And the CEO of it, he's probably the greatest mentor of my life. His name's John Galbraith. And he used to tell me, you got to be a helper. Just a very simple word. You got to be a helper. And I think that just kind of crystallizes my philosophy that I've really gotten from John and others, that whatever we're doing, we should seek a way to be a helper in life. So what was the best way for me to help at this stage of my life, right? As I watched some my concerns about the direction that the city was going right now, that I happen to have studied cities a lot of my life and a big part of my life. I'm a fellow at the Manhattan Institute in New York, which studies cities. And so I've seen what happened. You know, some of our cities, St. Louis and Baltimore and Detroit, used to be really considered great cities. What happens to them? Why do they go in the wrong direction? And I started seeing some of the, you know, while St. Pete's got a lot of momentum that we've been building over the last 25 years, I've seen some of the things that have happened in those places start to happen here. And I felt this is probably the best place for me to be, to try to help.
So the day that you announced that you were going to run for mayor, May 9th, 2017, and it was a big day for the city, arguably probably a bigger day for you. And I'm wondering, on that day, what emotions you were negotiating as you took to the podium and declared this decision.
You know, you wake up in the morning and you know you're about to go do something pretty big, right? And so you're thinking about it when you get out of bed. And as I'm sitting up and thinking about what I'm going to say, because I don't write out speeches and things before I give speeches, I don't memorize speeches. I kind of stick an outline in my head and then I just go and talk, right? Because I believe that that's the way to do it, to talk to people. If you do it that way, it comes from your heart and people recognize when it's coming from your heart. So I'm sitting up, just getting up, and I'm thinking, okay, what am I going to do? And it just this compelling thought hit my head is just tell the truth. You know, just tell people what you think. And that is really how we've tried to govern the whole campaign. Sometimes the truth is a hard thing to say. Sometimes there are things that you're going to say that are going to appear tough, you know, but sometimes you have to be tough. Sometimes you have to let people know what's going on in order to make sure they are equipped to be able to handle whatever needs to be done. And so that was really an overriding thought to me. And then I, you know, kind of got ready, got in my car, and drove over to City Hall. And we had not let anybody know we were going to do this in advance because we wanted to make sure we had an opportunity to have an announcement. And so we started calling around to people to come to the announcement. And we only started the day before. And the announcement started at 7:30 in the morning. And because we had a city council meeting that day, we wanted to do it before then. So a couple of the city council members wanted to be there. So I park on the side of City Hall, and the announcement was going to be on the steps of City Hall. And I turn the corner, as I'm walking towards it, and I look, and there are 200 people lined up at City Hall, I mean, on the steps. And to me, that was such a moving thing for me. It just was, okay, we're going to do this. You know, we got that. We have the support behind us. We're going to be able to take this thing forward.
Anyone who's picking up a paper in St. Pete, you know, the crime rate for the city is leveling, or appears to be leveling. Alarmingly, the rate of juvenile crime seems to be escalating around the areas of, certainly in car theft.
The public safety is the number one job of any mayor in the country, right? The reason you put a government together is to make sure you have an opportunity to protect the people. And so you have to address it from the law enforcement perspective, first of all. You do have to arrest people when they commit crimes. You have to try to find ways to keep them from committing crimes and to get them when they do, and then punish however the appropriate punishment is. So that you always have to address every crime, that perspective. But with respect to the juvenile crime, you're never going to solve it if that's all you do. You're never going to, because what you really have is you have a certain segment of our community that for whatever reason, whether it's maybe a breakdown of the family structure or whether it's just, you know, the environment that they're in or whatever, they're being brought and led into a life that results in them being in somebody else's car and driving away, right? So you have to look at that human component of it as well and see, how do you address that human component? And to me, what you're trying to do and instill, and this is why I work so hard in the Midtown projects. You know, the Midtown effort was my strongest effort. We've gone backwards on that in the last 4 years. It's one of the reasons I'm getting this, because I can't stand to watch us go backwards because of inattention to the Midtown community and the people that are at the lowest end of the economic ladder. So what you're really trying to do is instill in these kids the idea that they have the opportunity to have hope. They should have hope. They have the opportunity that they can improve their lives, that they can get a career, that they can actually advance as part of our society. They can get jobs just like anybody else, right? They have to have that opportunity. When they're sitting in that somebody else's car driving away, that's really the failure of the effort to communicate to them and have it be tangibly real, that they have the opportunity to improve their lives. If you're on your way to Harvard, you're not going to go rob a car. You're just not going to do it because you know you have this future ahead of you that you're not going to want to mess up, right? And I'm not suggesting everybody should want to go to Harvard, but everybody should have the idea that they can have the opportunity to do something other than robbing that car, other than stealing that car, right? So that is a number of things that you do to try to advance that. And to me, it's all about education, job training, and jobs. It's all about that. Because if people feel they have a path to those things, and so that they can earn an honest living without having to resort to crime, which is going to be, you know, it's virtually a certainty if you get into a life of crime, you're not going to do very well in life, right? You're going to go in a very bad place. Jail, you could be dead, you could be whatever. But if they honestly believe they have that, so what do you do? Well, we did a number of things, and I want to do more. One thing we did was we had something called the Mayor's Doorway Scholarship Program, which I created in partnership with the Pinellas County Education Foundation. So I would tell a child in a free and reduced lunch program, so a low-income kid in St. Pete, that in sixth grade, I'd go to him and I'd say, you know, if you do certain things between sixth and 12th grade, if your attendance is good, your conduct is good, you have at least a C average, you are drug-free and crime-free between 6th and 12th grade. When you get to 12th grade, we'll give you a four-year college scholarship. And I raise private money to fund it. What you're doing is you're telling a kid in 6th grade, stay good. Stay good, stay in school. In 12th grade, you're going to college. That's an incredible incentive for a kid to stay good. And we raised enough private money to fund 1,000 college scholarships like that. And 93% of those kids graduated from high school, went on to college. That's an incredible incentive to keep them from breaking into that car.
It's also a shift from symptomatic outreach. So yes, the backpacks and the snacks and the sundries are all necessary when we think about social outreach or social services or resources. But your philosophy, or it seems your strategy, hones more on the systematic, getting underneath the belly of the issue and addressing material poverty, yes, but also addressing poverty of self-confidence, poverty of connection, poverty of really just the emotional coping tools that a lot of these youth are robbed of.
Well, yeah. And like you say, you have to do both. You know, there's free and reduced lunch at school for a reason, right? Because kids need the food and they need to be able to do that. And you have to provide, like I built Mercy Hospital Clinic in Midtown because people have to get health services and you have to have an opportunity to provide people with some of the needs that they have as well. But you can't stop there. If you stop there, then you're never going to change the cycle, right? So you read Seamless City, my book. So in the book, what you can tell by the time you've gotten to about three pages is that I'm a strategic planning guy. I believe you set your mission, you set your objective, you identify your strategies on how you're going to get there. You then execute on those strategies, and then you put performance measures and metrics in place to see whether you've accomplished them, and then you retool and go from there, right? And so your first goal has to be, in the case of this, is, well, our objective is to reduce crime. And yes, that's our objective. But you could reduce crime just by changing the way crime is calculated, which happens sometimes. And so crime rates go down, but you haven't really reduced crime, or you haven't made it any safer, right? So your objective should always be to reduce crime. But undergirding that, your objective really should be getting a community where people are not committing crimes, or they are not having the motivation to commit crimes. That to me is, and I'm not, you know, nobody should misunderstand what I'm saying by saying that I don't think police officers shouldn't be out there arresting people. We did a lot of that. I increased the number of drug arrests in the city by 50% yearly when I was mayor. I believe you go after people that are committing crimes. But at the end of the day, you're not going to solve it, because we can't fill our jails with everybody that's poor, that's not able to get a job.
For some of these teens, jail may arguably be an escape from some of their conditions.
I'm just not sure that they're really even thinking about it, because if they know that you rob a car and get caught, you're going to be back in the street. You're not going to go to jail. And they know that. They figure that out. They're pretty smart. So they're making what they consider to be a rational decision at the time. So what we have to do is give them an alternative paradigm. So we say, okay, one could be college in 12th grade, but a lot of them aren't going to go to college. So I'm working on by the way, I also built a Job Corps training site in Midtown on 22nd Street when I was mayor. So a lot of people, we just met a young lady 2 days ago that had graduated from the Job Corps site and got a job, and she's telling me how great she's doing. I'm thinking, thank God it works. And we built a St. Pete College campus right on 22nd Street in Midtown. And we built a Head Start program right off of 22nd Street in Midtown. So you want to provide people with the opportunities to education, those things. We did a lot of that. To me, that's all about creating an environment of opportunity. Beyond that, the Association of Builders and Contractors has a program. I just had lunch today with their program over in Tampa. And they're called ABC, but they're the contractors. And what they do is they have an apprenticeship program where they'll take a child that's got a GED or a high school education, and they'll go and they'll make them an apprentice in one of the construction skills. So it could be plumbing or carpentry or electrician or whatever. And they'll give them a job. So you'll make 12 to 15 bucks an hour in a job right now. And they'll pay for your training at night for 4 years. So you can go through a training program that you become certified after 4 years. And every year that you're in the job, you get a little bit more money every year. And then when you get certified, you get a big bump. And you can make a very good living doing that. So it's an opportunity for a student that may not be going to college, may have no interest in going to college, or not an opportunity to go to college, but they have a path, right? They're doing 500-600 of those kids in Tampa right now. They're doing zero in St. Pete. I've talked with them. They've endorsed me for my campaign, but I've also talked to them. I said, I'd like to brand it. I'd like to make it a mayor's apprenticeship program in St. Pete, and I'd like to bring it into our city, take our kids, bring our kids through this apprenticeship program into the training. You imagine how many lives you could change with something like that. To me, and if you get a kid at 18 years old, even if you get them when they're in 10th grade, you say, listen, stay straight, stay good, don't stay out of trouble. When you get to 12th grade, then you have an opportunity to go into this apprenticeship program. Within 4 years, you could be making $50,000 a year. That's not a bad living for a young person coming up, right? And so we're going to do that. I've already talked to them. I've talked with the Education Foundation already. They're going to be partners in it. We're going to tie that all together. Again, the idea is you're trying to provide people with the opportunity to succeed without going in a bad way.
Mentoring, job shadowing, all of these tools that you're assessing for a solution are commendable. And we at SPG, we've talked about the arts' influence on a youth's trajectory in life and as a mode of expression and connection. And you are no stranger to the arts in St. Petersburg. In fact, you ushered, I'm not sure if our listeners even know the connection that you have in bringing the Florida Orchestra here, the Chihuly, the Dolly. Share with me how these decisions have created a massive ripple effect in the creative community here.
Well, when you first started talking about it, I thought you were talking about my guitar playing at the Saturday Morning Market.
Unfortunately, not now, but later on the podcast, we will.
You know, in 2002, we had a press conference over at the Museum of Fine Arts. That was my second year of office. And there had been an economic impact study on how much art impacts the community. And so we decided to talk about it. And at that press conference, I announced that St. Petersburg was the cultural center of Florida. Now, that was really part of an approach to lie until it becomes true. And now I say it as a jest because I've said that before and my opponent then says, oh, see, he says he lies. But I say that because what I'm really saying is if you set a goal for something big, people follow, right? So I set a goal that for St. Pete to become the art center. And I actually declared us to be the art center. That's kind of the decision, right? When you decide you're going to do something, it's amazing how people and resources flow to it.
Funny how that happens.
It does, right? And so I made that call. And then from there, we went on and we did a lot of things. I really helped lead the effort to relocate Dolly in a new building right on the waterfront in downtown St. Pete. We did bring the Florida Orchestra's headquarters into St. Petersburg, went out to Seattle and met with Dale Shahuli and brought the Shahuli collection into St. Petersburg. I rebuilt the Mahaffey Theater. A lot of people don't remember what the Mahaffey Theater looked like in 2001. It was a square building with no windows, and you actually entered from the parking lot and did not even know it was on the waterfront, and it's now this gorgeous facility. We brought St. Pete College campus into downtown, which along with that came the American Stage New Theater. And then St. Pete College, we helped them as they acquired the Palladium and made that another one of their museum assets into the city. We brought great exploration into Sunken Gardens, that museum. We expanded the History Museum. The museum expanded the Fine Arts Museum. Lots of really the great cultural renaissance of our city came to that point. And later, I sat down with Duncan McClellan and invented the Warehouse Art District, and which was really patterned after Seattle and Tacoma, Dale Shahuli, and created this really energy of an art center. And I think it does a number of things to directly answer your question. One is, first of all, it's an economic impact. There's no doubt in St. Pete, arts has a strong, strong economic impact for the people that work in the arts, people that enjoy the arts, tourism that come and see the arts. But it's also a huge quality of life thing to me as well. The arts, no doubt, is an enhancer of the quality of life of the people that live here. It just does. It's so you feel differently about the city when somebody comes to town and says, can I take you to the Dolly? You know, can I take you over to see Shahuli? Would you like to go on Saturday night to the Warehouse Art District walk? And it's just, you know, it's just different. It makes St. Pete cool.
So we're talking about the St. Pete Renaissance, and the arts is a big part of that. And you had some thoughts in terms of where we're going or where you like to see the city go in the arts realm. Could you expound on that?
Sure. When I was mayor, we created something called St. Pete Arts, which was really, we inventoried all the art assets we had in the city, and then we did a website for them, and so that we could start the effort to promote them as a single thing, as this is our arts in St. Pete, which I think has continued and is a good thing. And I believe that when we think of arts, we often think primarily of visual arts, although we sometimes think of performing arts as well. And we have a tremendous large number of performing arts assets in the city. So I think we could do a little better job of inventorying and promoting our performing arts as well. And I would love to do the same thing with our music. And music really is an element to the performing arts, but I would like to maybe pull that out as a separate brand and really inventory, because we have some great musical assets in the city. I like music. I'm a musical kind of guy, and I think it would be great to look at Austin and how Austin's reputation or in Nashville, and as they've become known for their music in their communities. And I'm not saying in place of the other arts. I think I'm saying in addition to the other arts, the visual arts, the performing arts, and then music is a component of that. I think that could be really cool for St. Pete going forward.
And really integrating music into our everyday experience and just having this pervasive envelopment of different talent. I know you have a penchant for, is it rock?
Southern rock.
Okay.
I really play a lot of different music. I'm not good at any of it, but I play a lot of it. But I like Southern rock, the Skynyrd and Marshall Tucker and Allman Brothers and things like that. In fact, I got to play with the Allman Brothers band when they were here in St. Pete, which was kind of a benefit of being mayor, I guess.
I guess so. When's the last time you picked up your guitar?
Last night.
Really?
Last night. I often will, if when I'm trying to calm down at night, I will pick up my guitar and play and just play and sing to myself at home.
Love it. So I want to talk about the transition from public life to private life and how you've navigated that so successfully. And there's a lot of healthy curiosity around the Edwards Group. It is wonderfully enigmatic. We know that there's a lot of great stuff happening there, a lot of great decisions being made. I would expect a tremendous amount of interest and inquiries and requests for support. And One would suppose that you are inundated daily by different businesses and organizations looking to connect with you in some capacity.
It's been an interesting travel that I've had because I started out in the business world and as a corporate lawyer, business acquisition lawyer for a lot of years. So I was involved in a lot of businesses in our community. I was involved in the chamber. I actually ran or was involved in five mayoral, successful mayoral elections before I ran for mayor. So I was very tied into it all for a long time before I ever ran for mayor. And then I got to be mayor for a while, almost 9 years. And of course, I was in the middle of it all. With the Edwards Group, it's been interesting and enjoyable because it's allowed me to continue to be involved in things that help move the city forward, but from a different seat than I was in before, than any of my other places I was before. So it's whether it was the redevelopment of Sundial, which was a challenge, but it was the old Baywalk, now Sundial, but it was wound up being a great project for the city, or the assembly of the land and for the ultimate development of the One St. Petersburg and Hyatt project downtown, or the Rowdies, which has been an ongoing effort to try to both get the team going and get them into Major League Soccer, all that, and a lot of other projects we've been involved in. The Edwards Group is the manager of the Mahaffey Theater and does a number of other things in the city, some of which I'm involved in more than others. But what's neat about it is I really think, you know, Bill Edwards made a lot of money in the mortgage business. He was very successful in the mortgage business. Now, by the time I came there, they were largely out of the mortgage business or moving out of the mortgage business, so I wasn't involved in that piece of it. And what he has been involved in since I've been here for almost 5 years now has been largely things that he wants to do to help the city. Now, how cool is that? To have a successful businessman in the town that wants to look for ways to help the city and invest his time and money into trying to make that happen. And so that has been an interesting process and an enjoyable process, and one that aligned with my objective as well, which is always to try to figure out how we can make St. Pete better and, you know, improve the quality of life of the people that here. And I think we've had a lot of success to do that. Beyond that, as you mentioned, Bill is often asked to contribute to various efforts and causes in the city. And I have to say he makes all those decisions. I don't filter any of that. I have to say he's a very generous guy when it comes to that. He's put a lot of his money into things that people help. Sometimes people see it. Sometimes people don't even know that he's done it.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned the Rowdy, so we have to go there now. And I'd love to get your assessment in terms of our chances or what you think our chances are in bringing a Major League Soccer team to St. Pete.
You know, I think they're good. They started out at, I want to say, with a dozen cities that were applying for four teams. And depends on how you count it, that's probably been winnowed down a little bit because a couple of the cities, actually two of the leading contending cities, have had political issues that have had them really now no longer considered leading cities anymore. At one time, they were right on the top of the list. So we've been kind of, you know, stable, I think, on that. And the characteristics that MLS is looking for are ones that align pretty well with us. One is television market. They want to be in a strong television market. The St. Pete area is the largest television market in the country that is not presently in the MLS. So what that means is all the other cities are in smaller television markets than us. So that's a good thing for us. We have a very strong following in terms of fan base. We get good attendance at our games for a USL team. We get good enthusiasm for the Rowdies. Great brand name, Rowdies, national, international brand name. And we have got a lot of corporate support. We had over 200 companies in our area that signed up to say, we're for this effort. They sent letters to the MLS. And a lot of them, most of them, I would say, but a large percentage of them said that we would be willing to be founding sponsors of the Rowdies if they get the MLS franchise. So we have all that. And Bill has been busily trying to assemble the financing for it, which is a lot. And we have a stadium plan, I should say, passed by 87% of the vote of the people. That is a remarkable stadium plan that can do a stadium of 18,000 to 22,000 seats right on the waterfront. I think it'd be the most beautiful, certainly the most beautiful soccer venue in the country, maybe the most beautiful venue, period, of sports in the country. And MLS, I think, is very interested. Bill was just up in Chicago in the All-Star break for the MLS week before last, I think it was, talking with Don Garber and others up there. And I've had many conversations with those fellows over the time. I think we stand a very good chance. It's competition. You know, the other cities aren't going to just sit back and let us do it. So we're going to have to compete. They're supposed to pick the first two teams by the end of this calendar year.
want to shift to the trop, just in the realm of sports and the debate or the query around the new location, if there is one for the new trop stadium. And we have potentially 85 acres poised for redevelopment. And when you think of Rick Baker, you can't not think of redevelopment. You just have a very sharp eye and vision for what we can do with the very little land that we have. And now we have sitting before us a potential opportunity. We don't know exactly what that's going to look like yet, but you probably have some ideas based on what happens with that team.
First and foremost, I remind people that in the 90s, I was on the baseball committee of the chamber, and I went door to door getting petitions signed to get the funding for the stadium and to try to get a baseball team for St. Petersburg. And that was a long, long-term effort for the city. The city's invested millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars into that facility. So I think the first objective is to try to work to keep the Rays in St. Pete. That's going to be harder because Mayor Christman has largely let them out of some pretty important parts of their contract. And so it's given, that's why they're looking in Tampa right now, is because he did that. So it's going to be a little harder to do that, but I will work to try to get a plan that could keep them in St. Pete, preferably right at that site. But whether they stay or don't stay, that site will be redeveloped either with a stadium or without a stadium. And I think that is 85 acres, as you indicated, right on in the heart of the coolest downtown in the Southeast United States, right? So I think there is great, 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 great potential for that site to do a number of things at that site. I think some sort of housing would be part of it. I would personally believe that it should be a significant portion of public green space in that. You know, that I think that's what has made St. Pete the great place it is, our waterfront park system, our green space around the city, the bike paths, the dog parks, the playgrounds, all that stuff. I think that should be a very, very important and significant component of whatever is done at the Trop site. And of course, I also believe the folks in Midtown should have a seat at the table when discussing all this, because a lot of those folks were displaced back when the original site was cleared many, many years ago at the old gas plant site, which is what it used to be. So I think, you know, concerning all those, I depending on whether it's a stadium is a component. And by the way, we could also have a stadium up in the Gateway area if the Rays decide to go there. So let's say they did and this site was open up completely, then you might have space for corporate headquarters and corporate space as well. So this could be, you're right, a great, great, great opportunity. I think it's a great opportunity for the city no matter what happens.
Right.
Because it's, again, we're positioned in a good way going into it, and it's a great asset. And if we have the right leadership going through it, I think it could be really cool.
Small business is likely the lifeblood of this community, or it has started to become the lifeblood of this community. And during your previous terms as mayor, you were very focused on small business, not only when small businesses opened, but several years into their existence. You were very sensitive to the 2 to 3 year mark in their journey, being really critical times of sort of make it or break it. And you would deploy your efforts to publicize their successes and to congratulate the team and really, really keep that engine going. And so you definitely have your finger on the pulse of small business, and it's likely the climate has changed since you've been in office. And so now coming back into office, presumably, what are you going to do to continue to retain the amazing agencies and companies we've grown organically and to attract more to the area?
Well, first, you have a great memory, because that's exactly what we did all that period of time. Thank you for noticing, as they say. You know, I ran a small business. I used to be running a small business for many years. I was president of a law firm. And I used to say that I got my MBA from Florida State, but I got my PhD in business the first time I had to make payroll and I had no money in the bank. You know, that's what being a small business is all about. It's not an easy way to pursue a career, but it's a very gratifying and can be a hugely successful way. And so I have great respect for the small business. I was involved in the Chamber of Commerce virtually my entire time before I ran for mayor. And the Chamber is largely small businesses. It's largely the largest component of the Chamber of Commerce is small businesses. And what I learned when I was at the Chamber was that 80% of the new jobs that we have come to St. Petersburg next year will come from existing businesses in our city. Sometimes we can tend to spend more of our efforts on trying to recruit the next business to come into town and not maybe enough to do what we should about the businesses that are already here. So whether it's making sure the permitting department is working so it's not causing havoc for people, which is going on right now, or whether it's not having too high taxes or too high regulatory burden on people in the business community, or whether it's just, you know, showing them support, like you mentioned, is celebrate this 2-year anniversary of a business that has made it for 2 years, which is a big mark for a business. All those are important. I used to go around the city and I would sit down with businesses on a regular basis. We kind of had a regular part of my routine. And I'd sit down with the leadership, whether it's a small business or a big business. And I'd say, okay, tell me, what are we doing right as a city? And I always like to start with the right because you want to hear the good news first. And so they tell me what they're doing, what they think we are doing right as a city. And I say, okay, where do you think we can improve? What are some of the things the city's doing that maybe we're not doing so good? And then they'll tell me that. And we'll keep track of all this, by the way. And if we're not doing something right, we'll try to fix it, right? And that's the whole idea by going, is to learn when they have concerns and try to make it. Because I want them to succeed, right? If our businesses don't succeed, people in our city aren't going to have jobs. And they have to have jobs to be able to pay for their mortgage on their house and their car and send their kids to college and whatever they want to do. You have to have jobs in a community. So I want to help the business. To me, the government should be trying to help business succeed, not get in the way of them somehow treating them as an adversary. It should be helpful. That's what we should be doing for the business. So those are the first two questions I would ask. And then I'd say, are you thinking about expanding in the city? And if you are, well, how can I help? What needs to be done in order to accommodate your expansion so we can get you to bring more jobs in our city? And then the fourth thing was always, are you thinking about leaving? Because you want to know. And actually, there was a time I found out, yes, somebody was about to leave. And I actually found it through a third party. So I showed up, and it was a Midtown business. They had about 60 employees, 50, maybe 50 employees, but they couldn't get into land, and there were sorts of problems. Right after I took office. So I just showed up at the business doctor on the door and said, I'm the mayor. Can I speak to the owner? And he was kind of surprised to see me. And I sat down, I think, I hear you're moving. Tell me why you're moving. How can I stop that from happening? We wound up stopping it, right? So if you can intercede at the right moment and try to help that business to grow and succeed, I think it's so, so important. I trust me, I understand how hard it is in small business. I know. I know how sometimes your sales aren't going where you want, or you're having this problem or that problem. You can't get the financing you need. Whatever it is, you go through a slow period of time. You have trouble getting employees. Whatever it is, businesses, that sometimes they struggle. And so the last thing I want to do is figure out, is somehow get in their way. But the most thing I want to do is there a way I can help? And so, yeah, I'm with you. I think, and the other thing I remind people, Home Shopping Network, Raymond James, what is now Franklin Templeton, Jabil, I think they have 160,000 employees in St. Pete. All these companies started as small businesses in St. Pete. Raymond James, you know, all these companies, they started as small businesses.
I think Valpak too.
Valpak. All these companies started small, right? And even Duke Power started in a little power plant where the yacht club is located right now at the old Florida Power Building. Most of our major companies in our community started small. Sometimes we spend so much time trying to get the next huge company to leave and put like a back office here or something and then move out, you know, 5 years later. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't try to get them here. I do. But we should also make sure we're working with the companies that are growing here, because that's our future.
So you lead by three different tenets, and it's listening carefully, walking around, and speaking clearly. Did I get it right?
That's the best I can remember. I read the same book you did.
Okay. And so it's interesting. It's an interesting philosophy. It's one that's worked for you. And now right. You find yourself deep in the digital age, where you're still walking around, you're still having those conversations, you're still present, but not only in person, but obviously in the social space, in the digital space.
Right.
And how you're going to directly communicate with your constituency is going to completely transform, at least from where it was in 2001. And so I'm curious as to your philosophy around direct communication as Rick Baker with your constituency on social media and in the digital landscape.
Well, I think we're demonstrating it right now. And I think that the communication mechanism, it's just another opportunity to do the listening and talking to folks, right? What we're doing on a podcast is the same thing I do when I go and sit in somebody's living room and they have 20 of their neighbors in. We talk about what's going on in the city. It allows for the dialogue back and forth to the community so that they can get an idea of what you're thinking, and also give some input. But while I will continue to do the social media and the electronic forms of reaching out to people, I will never back away from the shoe leather way of doing it as well. When you go to the neighborhood association picnics and you go to the gatherings of people of all types of our community, or I used to call it the Home Depot effect. And I would, it takes me 2 hours to get a screwdriver at Home Depot because I talked to 20 people while I'm in there. My poor kids growing up, they had to endure that. I think you have to have, you should have a desire to communicate to people and listen to people all the time. When I was a kid, I was the one with that the whole neighborhood was in my treehouse, you know, because I just love people. And I still do. I love it when some, you know, if I'm at a restaurant, which is more likely Chick-fil-A than anything else, but and if I'm at a place, people come up and they feel comfortably coming and talking to me. And I want that. I encourage that. I'm never put out.
You're not going to be tweeting or Instagramming?
Well, I might do some of that, but probably not a lot. I will entertain other people's tweeting and I may do some of that. I think that there's a degree, and we do it in the campaign right now, and I do it through the campaign. And I think that's a good way of doing it. But I think to the extent you're doing it, it needs to be substantive and it needs to be sincere and it needs to be with a purpose, right? And not just to have kind of a, oh, gee, don't forget me, I'm still out here type thing. It's that's I had ham and eggs for breakfast here at whatever. I think
believe it or
be
not,
personal.
We may be curious about that. We may want to know.
The beauty is I'll have people that'll be joining me at the diner. I love diners, by the way. And if you ever want to join me at a diner, you're welcome to do that.
I'll take you up on that.
Okay. I have actually a map in my car of the diners in the city. So I like to go out and have breakfast a couple times a week when I was mayor. I would just pick a diner, go at about 7 o'clock or 7:30 in the morning and get a newspaper and go. And nowadays I'd probably use my phone, but just look at the news and have breakfast. And people then would kind of come to my table and sit down and they'd be kind of surprised the mayor was having. And it was a great way of getting out and just on a very informal basis, not announced, not saying where I'm going, just show up. And so people in the community can sit down and talk to you. I like that a lot. And when you join me, you can see what I have for breakfast.
Excellent. So we're going to wrap up pretty soon. One of the things we like to do when we wrap up is give a shout out, and not just to any company. I know that you have a army of supporters out there that support you and you support as well. Really a individual, an entity or an organization that maybe doesn't have a lot of eyeballs on it right now, but they're doing great work. They're lifting St. Pete up and may not have attention. So this is an opportunity for our guests to give them a platform and bring them to our awareness.
Well, gee, that's hard because I've got a lot of them in my head that are jumbled around as I'm going along. I don't know that I could name one, but I'll name a few. And I apologize to anybody that don't come to my mind this very second. But let me back up and say that I think that people tend to think of the mayor as running the city. And in a lot of ways, the mayor does run the city. But the city progresses not because of the mayor, although hopefully if it's the right mayor, the mayor helps. But it's because of the community and the army of people that care about the city behind the government, right? So it's the folks that coach at their Little League games. I mean, how important is that, that somebody spends their volunteer? I was just walking through a Little League field last night, 31st Street Football Complex, and looking at all the coaches, the people, and I'm thinking, golly, they're giving their time, you know? People, you know, maybe teach Sunday school on a Sunday morning, give up their time doing that, or they just choose a career like a teacher, where their whole career is giving people, or a social worker. And we have these organizations like A Bully that provides such great work, and YMCA and Catholic Charities and the homeless service providers. And we just have this huge array of folks in the community that are doing the social service piece of it, the education pieces of it. And then we have the businesses. And I have so much respect for the businesses in our community because they're providing people with jobs. And I've been in business. It's hard. And so I'm thankful for them, and especially the ones that make the commitment to take a portion of the money they make and put it back into the community. And there are a lot of them. We would not be where we are. Look at today. We have two new museums under construction right now that are being funded by very wealthy people that have been very successful in business, right? And so isn't it good that we have people willing to do that so everybody can be able to enjoy that for generations to come in our city? And then just extend that through the arts organization. And then I have a special place in my heart for the people that work at the city of St. Pete, the police officers, the firefighters, the people that work in the water department, and who have had taken a real beating lately. But we have some great people that work in the water department, sewer department, our city, people that work at our rec centers and that to keep our parks clean and in a good condition. And people that, I mean, they're throughout the city, about 3,000 employees working for the city, and they don't get the headlines and they don't get the you know, the front page story about all the great things that they're doing, but they're very much committed to, you know, I had one of them recently tell me who who's had a hard time because of some of the issues that the city's had the last 4 years. And he said to me, you know, I bleed Pelican blood. Now, I don't know if I'd put it that way, but I think he was trying to demonstrate to me how committed folks are that work for the city to make it better. So I guess I can't probably put a finger on one, but I'm just thankful for this army of people in St. Pete. You know, St. Pete, when I was mayor, I had the privilege of leading what was really the greatest renaissance of downtown in our city's history during that period of time. And I always reminded people that it wasn't because of me. You know, it was a 25-year overnight success. It was people for decades had been working to try to move our city forward, not just mayors and council members, but people, all the folks I just mentioned throughout our community that have been building this great city that we are becoming. I believe that we are a great city. We've made some serious mistakes the last couple of years, and I'm going to fix that and turn those back around. But I think we have the potential of being the best city in America. I really do, because we are poised with the resources and the people that we have in this community to do just that. And with some of the things that we've talked about today and others, I think that we're ready to do that.
Rick Baker, thank you for being with us today.
My honor. Thank you for having me.
You've made it to the end of another great episode. For show notes, head to stpete.co to the show notes page, which includes links to all the resources mentioned in the show, as well as quotes and key insights from the show and information about the guest and the host. Thanks again to our sponsor, Big C. Head to Big C, that's BIGSEA.co to check out their work. And if you like what you heard, make sure to share this episode on social media and leave a comment. See you next time.